They put that knob way down on this thing. It's hard to reach. Now, Jim might correct me as a brother, but years ago, our dad told a story. It was a story called Palace Beautiful, if I remember correctly. And I tried to look it up because it wasn't original with my father. It came from a little book that he had, I remember. And I tried to look up the author. I couldn't find. There's a number of books out there by that title, and couldn't find this exact one. But it's an allegory about a beautiful palace that a king had left to be cared for by his servant. The king was going to go away for a period of time, and so while he was gone, he left his palace in the hands of his faithful servant. And for a while, things went along pretty well. Things were smooth. Every day the servant would walk through the things that the king had asked him to do and the list he'd kind of give him to keep the palace up and keep it looking beautiful. But one day, there was a knock at the door of the palace, and the servant answered it, and out in the street was a man who looked pretty ragged, like he'd had a hard time, and he laid out this story of exactly that he just needed a place to stay for a couple days, and would the servant let him in to spend a few days to kind of get his wind back, and then he'd be moving on. And the servant heard the story, and his heart kind of went out to him, and he said, yeah, sure, and he let him come into the palace, and unbeknownst to him, he had made a terrible mistake, because he had let into the palace a very destructive monster creature who hated the king and was bent on destroying the king and everything about the king, including that beautiful palace. It didn't take long for the monster to deceive the servant into letting him have more and more control over how things were done in the palace, and this creature was strong-willed, very convincing. Quite frankly, he was a bully, and the servant just did not have the gumption to stand up to him. And so he found himself every day more and more relinquishing control to this now very unwanted guest. Soon the evil guest talked the servant into replacing. The king had beautiful portraits all over the walls of the palace, and each one of them gave a message of the beauty of creation. And the creature finally kept working at the servant and convinced him that those pictures should be replaced. And one by one, the creature began to replace the pictures with, instead of the beautiful portraits, with portraits that the servant knew, even at the times he glanced at them, were things that he shouldn't be looking at or even thinking about. One day, the servant was doing his list, cleaning the palace as he had done faithfully every day, and the creature began to ridicule him. He says, "What are you doing?" He says, I'm cleaning. I'm getting things. I'm doing what my master told me to do, what the king told me to do." He says, "What an unnecessary waste of time. You could just as easily wait until you know the king's returning and just clean it up. Get ready for him. You know, you have a few days, just get it all done at once. And in the meantime, you can relax and have a lot of leisure time. Spend some time thinking about yourself for a change." After that, the creature began to gripe about how bright things were. Everything's so bright in this castle. There's way too much light. We need to darken things. And he kept griping and griping and griping about to the point where finally the servant was sick of hearing it. And he said, "Well, what do you think we should do?" He said, "We need to put curtains on the windows." And so the creature put these heavy curtains on all the windows and closed them. And now, instead of light, the palace was consumed in darkness. And then one day, quite unexpectedly, the king returned. The servant was so ashamed of what he had allowed to happen to the beautiful palace. He anticipated the king would be very angry or worse, severely punish him, or maybe even worse than that. But the king just seemed really sad. The servant told him how very sorry he was. He begged for his forgiveness. And the king quickly forgave the servant, and he said to him, okay, let's clean this mess up. And so they began to work that day. They worked all day long. They took down the disgusting pictures and put back the beautiful portraits that were there before. They ripped down those curtains that kept everything dark and let the light back into the palace. Piece by piece, they put things back where they belonged and cleaned it up. And it wasn't too long until the palace looked almost its original self. And then the king asked the servant the question that the servant was kind of hoping he wouldn't ask. He said, how did this happen? Why did you let things get so bad? That's when the servant noticed what he hadn't noticed before. The monster, the creature, the unwanted guest that he had allowed in had disappeared. He was nowhere to be seen, nowhere to be found. And so the servant told the king about the destructive guest and how he had come in and the things that he had encouraged him, in fact, bullied him to do, and how he pressured him to allow things to fall apart. And so he went through the whole story, and the king listened to it. And then in the end, he says, but now it appears he's left. He's gone. We're finally rid of him. And the king said, not so fast. He's still here. In fact, I know exactly where he is. Follow me. So the servant followed the king to a stairway that he had never really noticed before. It led down to a basement, really more like a dungeon. And as they descended down the steps, a pungent smell wafted up from the darkness below. It was so awful that the servant had all he could do to keep from gagging. When they got to the bottom step, at first the servant couldn't see. It was so dark down there, but the smell was stronger than ever. And slowly his eyes began to adjust to the darkness, and he noticed that there was a figure over in the corner. And then the figure came into view as his eyes adjusted even more. And he recognized it was that disgusting, intrusive monster who had been plaguing him for months, chained to the wall. Even in the darkness, he noticed what he hadn't really seen for some reason before. The monster, the creature, looked very dangerous. In fact, it was apparent that if he had an opportunity, he would attack and kill the servant. He hated him. He could see it in his eyes. He'd never noticed that before. What are we going to do about him? The servant asked the king. Oh, he must be destroyed. Or he will once again take over the palace. Then the king said words that chilled the servant to the bone, and he said, you must do it. Me, responded the servant in horror, I could never go to battle against such a powerful and evil creature. He would devour me in an instant. Now that I see him for what he is, I'm surprised he hasn't already done so. Once again, the king replied, you must do it. You must destroy the beast, but I will help, and you will win. The servant was in anguish. How could he stand up against this dangerous, this evil monster? Wasn't it obvious, based on what had already happened, that there was no way that he was a match for this creature? As if the king read his mind, he said, I know. But with my help, you can kill this master. So trust me and go to battle. The servant did trust the king, and the battle began. The fight was fierce and it was bloody, but in the end, with the king's help and the king's encouragement, the monster lay dead in the corner of the dungeon. And so with great relief that the battle was finally over, the servant and the king headed back up the stairs. And that night, the king and the servant had a wonderful meal together. The servant had forgotten how good the king's food tasted and how pleasant the king's company was. It was a beautiful evening. And as the servant laid in his bed that evening, just reliving the day and all the things that had been accomplished and the fact that the palace now was once again palace beautiful, he was just filled to the brim with joy, and soon he drifted off to sleep. In fact, the best night's sleep he had had for months. But early the next morning, he was stirred awake by an unearthly howling. A chill ran through him. Now that he was fully awake again, he heard the hellish sound, and he was wondering, where is this coming from? Where? And so he got up and began to follow the sound. And soon it led him to the top of the stairway. The stairway that he and the king had descended the day before. And slowly he made his way down the stairs. And once again, that awful, pungent smell hit his nostrils that once again made him gag. This can't be. This can't be. But as his eyes adjusted to the darkness, he saw it. And there in the corner, as alive as it had ever been, was the monster. The servant was distraught. He was beside himself. He was ready to run back up the stairs when he felt a sturdy hand on his shoulders, and it was the king standing right behind him. I thought I killed him. I thought we'd gotten rid of him and his evil once for all. How can he possibly be alive again? Oh, said the king, he will always come back to life. You will face this battle every day. But don't ever let a day go by when you don't put the monster down, or he'll grow stronger. And know this, you will never battle him alone. I will always be there to help you. And as long as you let me help you, you will always win. So, let's get this over with. Why do I tell this story? Well, we've been spending some time in a search for wisdom for the times we're in right now. We've been spending time in 1 Samuel, and if you want to go there, we're going to look at 1 Samuel 8 this morning. Together, as we've walked through this, and I will tell you, personally, it's been one of the most enjoyable studies I've had for a while. Just the things that God has taught me in my own heart have been important as I too wrestle with the times that we are in and the mindsets that we're dealing with and the ungodliness that seems so prevalent and the fact that those who want to do morally right are now considered morally wrong for their stances. And those are the things we've been wrestling through as we walk through this series and mine some jewels from the book of 1 Samuel. We've started with, remember, the decision to decide who we trust. Who do we really believe is in control? It's not the politicians. It's not the so-called experts. It's not the culture that seems to be so upside down at the present. It's not even our perspective of things. My truth may not be true. That's the reality. Only God's truth can be trusted. Only God's truth is always right. And we realize, we talked about the fact that he gave us that truth to protect us, to keep us healthy and safe. And from there, we walked and talked about watching and praying, how often we give lip service to prayer, but don't really value it. we can tell because it's the last thing we think to do so often. In the midst of circumstances and hardness, hard times, we finally get around to praying. It's that spare tire that we pull out in case of emergency. And we talked about how important it is to bring things to our God who is control. But then in addition to that, to watch for the answers. So often because we don't take it as seriously as we should, we forget to see how he provided and celebrate how he provided and miss an opportunity to have our faith strengthened. We learned a number of valuable lessons that are very relevant for the times we live in. If you didn't catch every message, I would encourage you to go back and on our Facebook page or website and go listen to them. Not because I taught them, but because God in his word taught me and taught us. And I don't want you to miss the lessons. And then last Sunday, we witnessed through the pages of Scripture that the Israelites were going through a series of heartbreaking setbacks. They made some destructive choices that cost them 34,000 lives of their soldiers, cost them the Ark of the Covenant, which they foolishly took into battle, thinking that it would force God's hand. Cost them tragedy, heartbreak. But finally, as we looked last week, they came to terms with the fact that they had gotten off track with their relationship with the Lord. And as a result, remember this, all the people of Israel mourned. And they sought after God. They came to terms with how far they had wandered. They recognized that their drifting from God was the cause of their struggles and their poor decisions. And they genuinely mourned over their sin and their failure to stay close. And then they returned. They sought after God. They took that step back, remember? And the Lord showed up big time, which he always does when we allow him to. So finally, things are once again right with God. They are seeing his blessing in their lives. They're having close and warm fellowship with him. They're at peace for the first time in years. They're at peace with him. It's a wonderful season. It just feels like everything is right. And then this, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 and 5. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, "You are old, your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations." Wait a minute. They've seen the blessing of staying close to God, following his direction. They know how badly things can go when you wander off and do your own thing. They've seen how disastrous it is to copy the world. They've made deliberate decisions to turn back from those, away from those destructive things and back to their God. And now this, we want a king to lead us. We want to be just like the other nations. God's not enough. His protection and guidance isn't what we want. We want something else. We want what everybody else has. We want a king. In case you think I might be making too much of this, look at verses 6 and 7. But when they said, "Give us a king to lead us," this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, "Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king." How could they do that after all the misery and destruction that they saw in their lives when they weren't allowing God to be in control? How could they seek after something else now? They had victory over their enemies, enemies they never hoped to conquer, and yet God had given them victory. For the first time in years, they were at peace. They had plenty of food, good shelter, and things were just in the right place. So why on earth would they upset the apple cart by asking for a king after all he'd done, rejecting their Lord. I can't believe it. Believe it. In fact, here's the message. If you and I are not very careful, we should not only believe this can happen, it can happen in my life. It can happen in your life. Because you see that monster down in the basement of our hearts that's full of self-will and selfishness and sinful ambitions and the desire to run my life without interference from anyone, even God, that monster is always there. I can kill him off one day, and he will raise his ugly head the very next. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. So here's the question. How do I kill this monster? How do I keep him chained up in the basement where he belongs, unable to have any part in my life? Because I don't want him to have any part in my life. How do I keep the rightful king, my God, in his rightful place in my life, in my heart? For the answer to this question, I want us to end up this morning in the New Testament. So would you go with me over to the book of Galatians? This is a letter that Paul wrote to the church in Galatia to people. In fact, the people that Paul was writing to had just experienced something very similar to what we've seen happen to the Israelites back in 1 Samuel. They had given their reins of their lives and their worship back over to another king other than God, and it had caused them tremendous heartache and consequences. And the worst thing about it, what they had handed the control of their life to was something that they'd been involved with before, and they knew how destructive it was. They knew what happened when they walked down this path, and yet they're right back on the path again. You ever done that? God, how can I be here again? I thought I'd finally left this behind. They allowed the enemy to regain the reins. And so now Paul's giving them instructions, careful instructions on how to keep this from happening. We're in Galatians chapter 5. Look down to verse 16. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. Now, I know for many of you, this is old information. You've heard this before, you've read it before, you're pretty sure you understand what it means. But just for clarity, let me walk us back through some important details to understanding this statement and its ramifications. We talk a lot about the gift God offers every single person. Every single person in this church, hopefully every one of you have accepted that gift. Every single person in our city, in the country, in the world. It's an offer out there for everyone. That gift of forgiveness. Complete forgiveness of everything we've ever done against the will of God in our life. That's broken that relationship and harmed that relationship. And he offers us the path back. As a gift. Now, we also understand that that gift was not free to God. It came at great cost. God the Son had to go to the cross and die for my sins and for your sins. But the gift is out there, and he offers it free for us. A number of things happen when you finally, and I finally, reached out and accepted that gift from God. We're going to focus on one right now. And that is that when you accepted that gift, the Bible tells us that God's the Spirit moves into your life, into your heart. He indwells you. He moves in and he lives there. He's always there. Always with you. He takes up residence in our heart, and he's always there to comfort and to guide us and to encourage us and to give us wisdom and direction. He is always there. But that doesn't mean we always allow him to do those things, does it? So in this verse, Paul is telling us that there is a choice that we must make. In fact, I would say it's a daily choice. In fact, I would add to that, at least in my experience, sometimes it's an hourly choice. Every day I've got to decide who's king. Is God to be my king? Will I live today by the Spirit of God, allowing him to control me, direct me, comfort, encourage me, help me in the decisions I need to make and the conversations I'm going to have? Is he going to have the reins of my life today? Or is my king going to be my desires, my wants, my attitudes? Am I going to unchain that monster living down in the basement? Another place living by the Spirit is called being filled by the Spirit. It's saying, God, I want you to fill me up and control my life today. I don't want this to be about Paul. I want this to be about you. If I take over, the monster is released. And this is a constant daily decision on my part and on your part. Well, how do I tell, you know, who's on the throne? How do I tell that I have the Lord on the throne? Well, Paul's not shy about explaining that to us, because he goes on, starting in verse 19, he says, the acts of the sinful nature are obvious. The acts of when I'm in control, when I've unchained the monster, when I've released him in my life, are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft. I'm pretty good so far. I'm not involved in any of those things. Hatred. Wait a minute. Discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. Paul, why don't you be a little clearer? Right. How do I tell when I've unleashed the monster? Those things show up. Suddenly I'm irritated. I released the monster this week. My wife called me from home, and I had just been confronted with a number of things that concerning me, and I wasn't trusting God at the moment about it. And my wife calls me and asked me a simple question, and I came back with a very irritated short answer. And her answer back to me, I can't remember exactly what it was one word, and I got the message. She didn't appreciate my tone, and she didn't slam down, but she hung up after that, and I thought about this, and I said, you know, the monster's loose. And I asked God to take control, and I apologized to my wife. How do I tell when the monster's loose? It's these kind of things. And if you're wrestling with them, if that's what you're seeing in your life on a daily basis, know this, it's because you've chosen the wrong thing to be on your throne. And I have too. But then he also gets very specific about how do I tell when I put the king where he deserves to be. I've allowed the Spirit. I'm living by God the Spirit. Verse 22 and 23, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, I want you to notice, because I think we sometimes read this wrong. We look at that list and we say, man, I'm going to start working on love. I want to be more peaceful. Today I'm going to show joy, and I'm going to be patient. And so we thought, thinking this is our list that we're supposed to post up there and really work hard to make a part of our life. But that's not what this says. This says that the fruit of the Spirit, this is the natural fruit that comes to an individual who has put God on the throne of their life. How do I tell if God's on the throne? I have peace. Circumstances don't make a difference. There is a joy in my heart that has nothing to do with what's going on in my life right now. It has everything to do with God and where He is in my life. There's a patience that, it's not like Paul. I'm not that patient. But it's not me. It's the King on the throne. And He's allowing me to bear the fruit of the Spirit in my life. You don't tell an apple tree, really work hard on growing apples. It grows apples because it's an apple tree. You don't tell a pear tree, work really hard and grow. No, it's a pear tree. It's going to grow pears. When you and I allow God's Spirit to be on the throne of our life, that monster gets chained back down in the dungeon, and these things simply show up. So it's not a guessing game who's in charge. It's really pretty simple. So in our list of things that we've walked through under the caption of Wisdom for the Times, add this. I must choose daily to put God on the throne of my life or release the monster in the basement. In fact, let me add this. You don't have to, if I don't choose to put God on the throne, the monster is released. That's just the reality, because He is too strong. Our old nature, as Paul calls it in another place, is just too strong for us to do battle with it on our own. So beware, because I want you to know, and I'm going to speak for all of us, we're fickle people. Today I might be seeking God with all my heart, and tomorrow I might be demanding to control it myself. Today I might be fully satisfied that God is all I need and all I want, and tomorrow I might find myself chasing things that are so far from the heart of God that I look at myself and I wonder, God, are these even the same person? The reality is, as long as we're on this planet, living in these bodies, every day we're going to have to kill the monster. Every day we're going to have to decide who's in charge. Whose will are we going to live by? Who gets to be on the throne? And that choice makes all the difference in who we are and how we react and what takes place. And it makes all the difference on, as I lay my head on the bed pillow at night, how I feel about the person that I am. We can end the day ashamed, or we can end the day saying, Father, thank You. Today, with Your help, I lived the way You'd want me to. I served You well. Andy Stanley puts it this way. He says, every day you and I are telling a story. Is my story today palace beautiful? Or is my story going to be Paul ugly, Paul ungodly, Paul miserable, and Paul ashamed? And I've been on both those pages, I want you to know. What's my story for today going to be? What's your story for today going to be? And tomorrow, you start a new page, and you have to once again decide who's going to be on the throne. The monster, who's alive and well and wants to run the show, or the King. Your choice, my choice. But we have to choose. Let's pray. Father, thanks. This is, I feel like it's been an important series, because our hearts are challenged right now. We see the events going on in the world around us. We see the upside down thinking, and we struggle with it. We even struggle with the slippage in our own hearts as we think of positions we once held and were strong in that, and knew that they were of You, and now there's been slippage. And so we wrestle with all of that, and we wrestle with how we even survive in the midst of the circumstances that we're living in right now, when good is bad and bad is good. So we needed to think through how to be wise in the midst of these times. And You've allowed us to do that. You've helped us do it through this book. And I thank You for this end point, this reminder that we decide who's going to be on the throne. I pray that we are enough frightened of the monster that lives inside us, that thing called the old nature that always is ready to rear its ugly, destructive head, that we are fearful of him. And because of that, on a daily basis, we put you on the throne. And thank you for promising to always be there and give us everything necessary to serve you well. We pray these things in your Son's name.
God, and oh, we'll see how great great is our God.
Well, church, at this time, if you need prayer, we're going to have folks up here that are here to pray with you over anything. Other than that, have a great Sunday, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.